You're listening to an Insight 18 special on Money Control.
The day of the FIFA Men's World Cup is finally here. And on this podcast, we will cover some odds and ends related to the cup. In just a few hours, one of the most watched events in the world will kick off. And we here at Money Control will try and answer some of the internet's and your most burning questions about it. My name is Rakesh, and joining me with the questions is Sheetal. And you're listening to Money Control.
The FIFA World Cup is finally here. All your burning questions answered.
An exclusive on Money Control.
Question 1. Where and when can I watch the inaugural ceremony and match of the World Cup?
Well, set your clocks to 6:30 p.m. because that's when the opening ceremony begins. The first match is between host country Russia and Saudi Arabia. That starts at 8:30 p.m. The venue is, of course, the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, Russia. You can watch the ceremony and the matches on TV on Sony 10, Sony 10-2 HD. You can also live stream it online on sonylive.com. Football is increasing in popularity in India, and you can tell that is true because the World Cup will have commentary in Hindi, Bengali, Tamil, Telugu and Malayalam as well on Sony's other channels. In a recent report, Sony officials said they were expecting viewership in India for the 2018 World Cup to cross 100 million. With match timings more amenable for Indian viewers, the World Cup in Russia is expected to attract very good viewership. For the uninitiated and those who don't care to watch football matches at ungodly hours, bear in mind that Russia, or at least the Moscow part of it, is about 2.5 hours behind India, time zone-wise. So you should be done by 1 a.m. most days. The official broadcaster even has a campaign called Meri Dusri Country that encourages Indian viewers to cheer for an adopted country's team. I have a feeling that to most of us, it's going to be Brazil. And well, Brazil is also the favourite among the bookies.
Question 2. Is the inaugural ceremony going to be fun? And who's performing in it?
Robbie Williams, one-time teen heartthrob and current global superstar who is incidentally excellent at telling funny anecdotes. You should hear the one about him getting booed by 80,000 German fans in Nuremberg when he, apparently out of love for them, sang the Nazi national anthem. Major faux pas, but the fun is in the telling. How are the British taking that? See what I did there? Robbie Williams used to be part of Take That, etc. Well, a lot of British MPs and politicians are not taking that well. Robbie has been accused of selling his soul to a dictator. Politicians and campaigners have criticized his decision to perform in Russia and urged him to follow the lead of the royal family, as well as government ministers, and refrain from attending the event in protest against Russia's alleged involvement in the Skripal poisoning. This is, of course, the alleged poisoning of former Russian spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Labour Party MP Stephen Doherty said, and I quote, "It is surprising and disappointing to hear that such a great British artist as Robbie Williams, who has been an ally of human rights campaigns and the LGBT plus community, has apparently agreed to be paid by Russia and FIFA to sing at the World Cup opener." Unquote. He's of course referring to the human rights violations perpetrated by Russia and their famous intolerance to LGBTQIA+ individuals. Robbie, though, is no stranger to partying in Russia. Why, he even wrote a song called Party Like a Russian. The song put a rather romantic spin on capital flight from Russia. Some of the lyrics for yourself. It goes, "It takes a certain kind of man with a certain reputation to alleviate the cash from a whole entire nation. Add to that, subcontract disputes to some brutes in Louboutin, act highfalutin while my boys put the boots in." Unquote. Well, earlier this year, he even performed at a St. Petersburg party to celebrate 20 years of Megaphone, a Russian mobile phone company controlled by Alisher Usmanov, the Uzbek-born Russian billionaire and Arsenal shareholder. That's not all. The Guardian of London reports, and I quote, "In 2014, Robbie Williams allegedly performed to a group of Putin's inner circle at the request of the Chelsea owner, Roman Abramovich. Vladislav Surkov, who planned Russia's intervention in Ukraine and is understood to be one of Putin's closest advisors, was personally invited to the party by Abramovich. Robbie Williams was later photographed with Surkov's wife, Natalia Dubovitskaya." Unquote. What does Robbie have to say about the accusation that he may be, well, no angel? He went on to say, and I quote, "I am so happy and excited to be going back to Russia for such a unique performance. I have done a lot in my career, and opening the FIFA World Cup to 80,000 football fans in the stadium and many millions all over the world is a boyhood dream." Unquote. Celebrities, you can't do with them, you can't do without them.
Question 3. Enough Robbie Williams and his saying something stupid. Which other angels are saying, "Let me entertain you," at the ceremony?
It's a fairly eclectic mix, actually. We have Placido Domingo, among the greatest tenors the world has ever seen. Tenor is, of course, the highest vocal range for males. Domingo was a third of the great ensemble, that is, the three tenors, with the other two being Jose Carreras and the great Luciano Pavarotti. One of the better-known contemporary tenors, Peruvian Juan Diego Flores, whose light and flexible voice I am personally a huge fan of, will also be performing. If you do not know much of Flores' repertoire, and why would you, we refer you to the aria A Mes Amis from the Donizetti comic opera La Fille du Régiment. This aria, or song, requires you to hit 9 high C's, and Flores is delightful while doing so. Perhaps we might get a hint of that. Here's hoping. No one from Russia is performing, you ask? Well, Aida Garifullina is. That's who. This young soprano, which is the highest vocal range for females, who incidentally shares her name with an extraordinary opera herself, that is Aida, is mostly known for her Mozart opera roles and had earlier performed at the Summer Olympics in London 2012. Cornering the opening ceremony market there, I see. Good for her, because there will be plenty of eyeballs watching her hit those high notes. So it's a lot of classical music? Well, no, we need the official song, don't we? This time it's going to be the turn of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Joining the ranks of Waka Waka by Shakira, La Copa de la Vida by Ricky Martin, We Are One by Jennifer Lopez and, well, Pitbull, will be Will Smith and Nicky Jam with the official song of the tournament, Live It Up. Admittedly, the song has not received much love on the internet, but perhaps watching it performed live with 500 dancers might change that. We'll know soon enough.
Question 4. Tell me all I need to know about India and the World Cup. How many Indians are likely to be in Russia to watch the Cup?
Well, good question. Looping back to India. First up, as you well know, 32 countries are playing in the tournament across 11 cities in Russia. Among the countries not qualified for FIFA World Cup 2018, Indian football fans have purchased the highest number of tickets for the FIFA World Cup 2018 in Russia. Indian fans are preparing to turn up in huge numbers at the biggest contest of the world's favorite sport, also called the Beautiful Game. As per a report by the Times of India, and I quote from that report, international fans have been allocated 54% of the tickets. We can confirm that 17,962 tickets have been allocated to Indian fans. India is in the top 20 in terms of tickets sold. The sales are ongoing. Unquote. The host nation Russia naturally leads the ticket sales with 872,578 tickets bought by Russians. Last year, when the ticket sales started, Indians were among the top 10 buyers, according to FIFA officials. Among the playing nations, Russia is followed by a few European teams in terms of the tickets purchased. From the countries who did not qualify for the World Cup, USA purchased the highest number of tickets, followed by China, and then India.
Hang on, side question. Just remind me, where are we on FIFA global rankings when it comes to football?
Well, I'll give you a quick side answer as well. The number is 97. It's a good number to tell your parents if it's your exam scores, but in goal-scoring football ranking, it's not quite there. And nope, if you're asking one more side question, no, we have never qualified for a World Cup yet. But the popularity of the game is increasing and we'll soon get there. Hum honge kamyab, etc, etc. But listen, we do have some fanatic fans, alright? According to FIFA officials, when the last-minute ticket sales phase started in April 2018, Indian fans purchased around 1,900 tickets in the first 24 hours itself.
Question 6. Speaking of ticket sales, I read somewhere that FIFA has lodged a complaint about ticket sales or something. What's happening?
Well, that is in fact correct. You have read right. FIFA has filed a criminal complaint in Switzerland against online ticket platform Viagogo in its crackdown on unauthorized World Cup ticket sales at marked-up prices. FIFA said earlier on Tuesday it joined other parties filing criminal complaints against alleged opaque and deceptive business conduct by Viagogo in the so-called secondary market. The legal action filed on Monday was based on a breach of the law on unfair competition against Viagogo AG with the public prosecutor's office in Geneva. Soccer's world governing body had said in a statement. Sad news is that gullible fans who bought through unofficial platforms, including Viagogo, for World Cup games in Russia, face being denied entry into stadiums. FIFA said it would cancel all tickets it identified as being traded through unauthorized sellers. Viagogo's website was still selling World Cup tickets as of Tuesday, including single seats for the June 14th opening game at more than double face value. For example, a Category 3 ticket, which is the cheapest available to non-Russian residents for Russia versus Saudi Arabia, was priced at $480. The same ticket, bought originally through FIFA's website, cost $220. A ticket in a corporate hospitality section for the same game at the Luzhniki Stadium was priced at $5,530 on the Viagogo site. That is some scam. This is not new though. Similar incidents occurred even in Johannesburg and Rio de Janeiro during the past two tournaments. Well, it's the market, I guess. Wherever there is money to be made, there come the scamsters.
Question 7. Speaking of money, how much money do players stand to make at the World Cup? Is it as much as they make with football clubs?
Not really, is the answer. Playing at the World Cup is more for their country's glory than their bank accounts. The tournament does not really pay the astronomical amounts that these players get paid at the clubs. Those numbers are a whole different ballgame. They read to me like some small country's GDPs. It does not, however, mean that peanuts are on offer, though. There is still a substantial amount of money to be made. The prize money amount available for distribution at the 2018 World Cup has increased from $358 million in 2014 to $400 million this year. Let's break that down. 16 teams, which are eliminated at the group stage, will receive $8 million each. Now, 8 teams eliminated after the round 16 receive $12 million each. And then the 4 teams eliminated in the quarterfinals receive $16 million each. So it's a group of 32 countries, first elimination 8, and then 12, and then 16. The team finishing 4th will receive $22 million, the team finishing 3rd, $24 million, the runner-up will receive $28 million, and the winner will take $38 million home. Apart from the amount that the teams would win, all 32 qualifying teams will receive a preparation fee of $1.5 million each. As per FIFA's club benefit program, an additional $209 million will be awarded to the clubs releasing its players to participate in the World Cup. Also, another $134 million has been earmarked by FIFA under the club protection program, by which clubs are compensated for losses incurred due to players getting injured while playing in the World Cup. The total contributions for the participants in the 2018 FIFA World Cup will amount to $791 million, which is 40% more than that of the previous edition. So, well, it's not exactly nothing. After all, it is one of the greatest sporting events known to mankind.
Question 8. Man, all this sounds like a lot of fun. I wish India would qualify someday in my lifetime. So quickly tell me a story about Indian football and make me feel better, will you?
We'll get there. Hum honge kamyab. But here is one of my favorite stories about Indian football. Partho Chatterjee, a prominent historian, writes about this in his book, The Black Hole of Empire, History of a Global Practice of Power. What I'm about to tell you is a very Lagan-like story, and I have no idea why there has not been a self-important Aamir Khan film about it already. I mean, he has done cricket, he has done cycling, he has done wrestling. I should think it's time for football. The story goes that football, much like cricket, was a transplant in India thanks to the British. And the white guys kept the game very much to themselves, thank you. If cricket gained a foothold among white dudes in India in Gujarat, it was at the other end in Bengal that football set foot in. No wonder then that West Bengal remains one of the most footy-obsessed states in the country. In Bengal, the gentlemen of Barrackpore played against the Calcutta Club of Civilians. All white, no Indians please. Business as usual. Wait a minute, weren't the British all about gentlemanliness and cricket? Sure, but by this time, football had come to be associated with Victorian manliness and masculinity and was thought to impart lessons in discipline, obedience, gracious defeats and honourable victories. You know, that sort of stuff. The British, par for the course, were not readily accepting of Indians in the game. They took to the well-trotted route of racism and, well, some classic body shaming. One journalist went on to declare one could identify a Bengali by his legs. Either they were anorexic thin or, quote-unquote, very fat and globular, with round thighs like a woman's. Wow. This gentleman journalist went a step further. He declared the Bengali's leg was the leg of a slave. The Bengalis, though, were undeterred, shamed and abused, and yet they persisted. Small victories against small British teams were occurring, but the turning point in this took place on the 29th of July, 1911. The Mohun Bagan Athletic Club had, by sheer will and defying great odds, reached the final of the Indian Football Association Shield. On their way to the final, they had beaten the Rangers, the Rifle Brigade and Middlesex Regiment in a thrilling semi-final. Word had already spread of this extraordinary turn of events where the local team would face the East Yorkshire Regiment at the finals. The date was the 29th of July and the venue the Calcutta Football Club grounds. The game was supposed to start at 5:30 p.m. but the crowds had started to assemble starting in the morning. Special trains ran from Burdwan to Howrah. Extra ferries ferried fans across the river to Calcutta. Fans from neighbouring states including Odisha, Assam and Bihar were ready to participate in the moment, so much bigger than the game itself. Even though the inside of the stadium could only hold about 4,000 to 5,000 people, the assembled crowd leaking into the ramparts of Fort William and beyond were about 100,000 in strength. At about 5:30 p.m., the game began. Chatterjee's writing speaks of the climax of a film that I still do not believe has not been made. He says, and I quote, "After a goalless first half of 25 minutes, which was considered sufficiently punishing on a tropical summer afternoon, a hush descended on the assembled multitude when Jackson put East Yorks in the lead. But 5 minutes before the final whistle, the crowd exploded when Shibdas Bhaduri, after frequently switching positions with his lookalike brother Bijoy Das to confuse the opponent, made a run down the left to equalize. Then, with barely a minute left, Slippery Shibdas, as he came to be known among white players and journalists, dribbled through the defence once more and, facing a solitary Cressy in goal, kept his head and passed the ball to the unmarked Abhilash Ghosh, who drove home the winner." Unquote. The scenes that followed were unlike any seen in Calcutta Maidan. Think Lagan, that, in real life, with a lookalike brother. I have no clue why this is not a film yet. The newspapers were, of course, in raptures. Anand Bazar Patrika, in an editorial titled The Immortal 11, said, and I quote, "May God bless the immortal Mohan Bagan for raising their nation in the estimation of the Western people by their brilliant feat on Saturday. The victory is no doubt ours, and that in the line of physical culture, wherein the Bengalis were at any rate for so long held to be lamentably deficient," it went on to say. Victory was that much sweeter because the men played with no boots, not least because football boots cost well over 7 rupees, much more than the average monthly salary of a school teacher. Besides reasserting the Indian male's masculinity, the victory of a barefoot team against a privileged English set also rang resoundingly of nationalism, as Chatterjee went on to note. The win in 1911 came at a time when Bengal was lit by armed resistance against the Raj. Only 6 years prior, the same Bengali people had staged agitations challenging the partition of the province by Lord Curzon. So, to cut a long but thrilling story short and to answer your question, we have shown moments of great brilliance in a game that has never quite enjoyed the same popularity or clout as cricket. But football fever in India is on the rise, and if history is anything to go by, it should not take us too long to challenge the world order, one goal at a time. If only our Ministry of Sport read the history books. Happy football season, everyone.
This is an Insight 18 special on Money Control.